Welcome to the Digital Agency Pros Podcast with Andrew McBurney, your host of Digital Agency Pros. In this podcast, we sit down and talk to CEOs, founders, and professionals in the marketing world and talk shop all things related to building an agency and marketing. All right, let's get into it.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode. And today we have Brendan Tully. And Brendan Tully is the principal consultant at WP Speed Fix, a business that specializes in WordPress site speed optimization. And he's also runs the Search Engine Shop, a search engine marketing agency since 2008 and has over 20 years in the online marketing space. Welcome to the show, Brendan.
Thanks, mate. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. I've seen you actually speak publicly back in 2017, which was kind of cool. And I've hired you guys for at least three websites, if not more, I think back in that same year through WP SpeedFix. So I'm definitely excited to sit down and chat. I know, I just know that you know a lot of stuff about this stuff. And being in the game for over 20 years, that's impressive when it comes to online marketing.
It sounds weird when you say that.
I feel like everybody you talk to, they've been like, yeah, I've been in it for 2 years.
I saw someone on Twitter the other day who they had like, it's your expert, been in the game for 4 years. I'm like, whoa, is that the standard to be an expert now? Like, but yeah, it's a long time. It's weird to hear someone else say that.
No, that's awesome though. And I'm excited to kind of dig into it and hear kind of how you progress through. So I know you got a couple businesses now that you focus on. Do you have any, I'm just curious, just cause like, I know, you know, a little bit about SEO, do you have any like affiliate side hustle type brands as well? Or are the two that we mentioned there, that's your main focus?
I do have some affiliate stuff. Actually, I was talking to Matt Diggity in 2017, maybe 2018. I was very frustrated. We just had our first baby and I was like feeling the crunch, the time crunch. Cause like all our stuff is like client stuff or customer stuff, agency really. So I was like, this sucks. Oh, this client work. And so I actually started doing some affiliate stuff then. So I do have a little affiliate stuff on the side I would love to just give it way more love, but it doesn't get enough love, but it does pretty well for the amount of attention it gets. So, So I do have I'd call it a side hustle.
Gotcha. That's awesome. I love that. And then, so 20 years ago, how did you get started with online marketing?
With a long story and a short story, the shorter version is my background's in IT. So in 99, when I was maybe 98, 18 or 19, we started an IT support business with a friend. So that was like ticking along, just for local businesses, fixing computers, selling them computers, setting up networks and stuff. And we had a couple of stuff. We had one staff member maybe, and then we needed to hire somebody. And this guy came along that had this online store he was running that was like, at the time it was early 2000. I don't even know the dates. It's like 2002 or 2003, something like that. He wanted to shut down the store. He was doing like 100K a year in revenue, which was only like 15 or 20 grand of profit. So it was like a full-time job, but not a full-time wage. So we wanted to get a real job. So we said, okay, well, come work for us and we'll run the store. The store was selling computer parts. So we did that. So he started working for us. The store went from, in the first year that we had it, it was doing 100K to a million. And then it went from a million to 6.5 million in the second year. So that's kind of how I get into online marketing. So from there, that was the early 2000s. So I didn't even know what SEO was, but we knew if we changed certain fields on the page and stuffed a whole bunch of suburbs in the footer of the site that would rank for different search terms, like, computer store, whatever the city is or town. So that's how I kind of got into online marketing. And like, I look back and like, we were fumbling around. Like we didn't even know what that word SEO was. We had an email list of 20,000 people that we'd send mails to it, but they were the worst emails, but they still worked in terms of selling stuff.
Well,
go ahead.
I imagine back then, like, it would have been way easier to inbox with, like, no, like, less spam, no promotions tab. Like, so, like, you probably could wreck the copy a little bit and still get those results.
Yeah, everything, like, everything was easy. And we didn't really know what we were doing. We're just fumbling around. Like, online marketing was still a new industry. Like, we tried AdWords as well. We DIY'd it, and it was horrible. We had the experience that everybody who doesn't know anything about AdWords or Google Ads now does would burn a whole bunch of money and nothing happened. But I think back now, if I knew then what I know now, like, that would have been such an easy business to, especially at the time, to really, like, we dominated, but we could, you know, it would have been 10x what it was had we actually had some online marketing experience. But that business grew rapidly. So we went from those four of us to 25 in a very short period of time, and we were really out of our depth. So ran out of cash. The whole thing just ended up at, it just became a disaster. So the business actually went bust because the growth was so rapid and out of control. So it went bust at the end. We ran out of cash basically at the end of 2007. And the business folded. And from there I started doing just, people started asking about SEO. That was kind of when, I wouldn't say it went mainstream, but people started to know what the word SEO, everyone used to call it CEO.
Right. Yeah.
Can you do that SEO or CEO thing for me? So, I started doing that for a handful of businesses, and that's how I started, the Search Engine Shop, our search agency, in 2008. So, I ran that like kind of like freelance mode for a year or maybe 2 years. Year and a half, and then with some friends we won this government contract to do workshops and training for small business owners. So the government basically paid us to put on internet marketing workshops for those like typical local business, small business, and that's how I got a lot of the client base we still have today. So yeah, so that's kind of the shorter version of the story and how I got into it. So I've been running that search agency since 2008, and we actually still have a lot of those original customers as well.
That's awesome. I think that would speak to just the level of care you put in your projects, which I'd love to get into. But that idea of doing those workshops, like, I don't know about every country, but I know the States has them. Apparently Australia has them. Canada has them. I take advantage of them. I've done probably 10 of them maybe over the years. Mm-hmm. And you basically get paid for an hour, show up, talk about SEO or whatever. Then you walk away with a bunch of leads. And yeah. It's really not that hard to get here anyways, to kind of stand out, because there's not a ton of people who kind of specialize in, like, even if there's like another person doing SEO, you can typically find a different angle where they're like, well, we'll talk about this. Like, maybe it's like page speed or whatever, right?
Mm, yep. Yeah. And I think, like, I don't know what your experience is, but after doing the workshops, it was pretty clear that, like, there's a large part of the web industry and probably more the traditional like web design space where their business model runs on keeping customers in the dark and not really helping them understand how the whole thing works. Like, they charge someone, we had so many stories of people getting charged 15 or 20K for like a 5-page website that didn't even work properly. Mm-hmm. And I think just standing up there and explaining how these, you know, the simple concepts and like demystifying it, taking it out of like this black box, like, you know, particularly in the SEO space at that time, it was all about hammering a site with links. And nobody really understood that, or nobody explained to these small business people how that worked. So just standing in front of them and just explaining in simple commercial terms how it works, like simple things like if you're a dentist and you want to rank for teeth whitening and dental implants and Invisalign and all these things, then you need a page of content on the website for each of those things. And if you don't have a page, you have no chance of ranking for it. And just like explaining, taking away all the technical stuff, just explaining it in those simple terms builds a lot of trust. And they're like, oh, this, you know, it's not a black box. You're a trustworthy person. You know, you kind of establish that relationship with them. So yeah, I totally agree. Like, it's an easy, even today, I think if you're starting or you have a small agency and you want to grow, it's a really good channel to just get in front of people and have a conversation. And also if you had a workshop with 20 people and it, you know, takes you an hour or two to stand in front of them, that's, you know, that's a pretty good return on time if you're getting a few leads or, you know, a few good contacts out of that.
Yeah. And half the time these places don't even pay you to do it to begin with. So it's, yeah, it's definitely, it's a great way to go, especially for those early age, really any agency of any size, but, that's cool to hear that you've done that as well. Now, so 2008 hit. Were you impacted by the recession? Is that kind of what triggered your shift? Or if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I would say partly. Like at the time, I would have said no, but looking back, it was probably part of it. So the business, when you have a growing business, there's always more. So from a cash flow perspective, there's usually always more cash tomorrow than today. So you have positive cash flow. So that's great when you're growing, because a rapidly growing business just chews cash flow like there's no tomorrow, especially like an e-commerce business. But when the growth flattens out, then you get into negative cash flow days, or you might have a negative cash flow month, and that's when you get into trouble. So I think part of the problem was we didn't manage the money very well. We went from a little business to a big business very quickly, where we were importing stock and we had tax to pay, and stock might not sell very quickly and things like that. So we had rapidly growing business, and then all of a sudden it flattened off. So I think it was part of the flattening off of the business killed it, and that was related to the economy at the time. And then part of it was just we were out of our depth and we didn't know what we didn't know, in a sense. So we didn't know how to manage that much cash coming in and out of the business every day. So yeah, I'd say I wouldn't say the economy alone was the cause of it. Definitely some part of it. So yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's such a huge part of business. And I imagine you were able to take a lot of those lessons and carry them forward as you kind of started your freelancing and then grew that from there. Now, what kind of triggered you into that point? Like you start out your freelancing, you said a year or two, and then did you start bringing on, was it friends you met, said, or are you bringing on hires? Like, how did you eventually get to this place where you're actually growing an agency?
Yeah, well, I very quickly got to, you know, making six figures out of that agency. And I think I probably read the 4-Hour Work Week at one point around then. Mm-hmm. So I started with, I think we had some Philippines hires to kick us off. To be honest, I don't quite recall, but we definitely had, we still do today, a team in the Philippines, but I think those were our first hires, I'm pretty sure. Maybe we had a bookkeeper, maybe a bookkeeper in Australia was actually our first hire, but yeah, it was, I think maybe we had some Indian VAs, I can't quite recall, but those were our first hires. So just to take away, like doing things like citations. I remember I was at the time I was doing the citations myself when we first started. So yeah, like now I think back, I'm like, that's crazy. But that's what you do when you start off, really doing everything yourself. But yeah, I'm pretty sure the first hires were in the Philippines or India, maybe.
Gotcha. That's awesome. Have you ever, I've tried hiring all over the place, and I've never really, except for like highly technical positions, never was able to crack the code with India. And was that something you were able to do effectively, or do you find like the Philippines is kind of your bread and butter for outsourced help?
Yeah, I'm the same. We could never, we certainly had some like high, like you said, like really super technical people from India, particularly for like one-off things like complex analytics and things like that, or maybe complex Linux stuff. But yeah, Philippines generally has worked pretty well, Eastern Europe as well. But yeah, could never, yeah, have never really got traction with Indian hires. And also, we've used services in the Philippines to hire for us. So that also makes it a lot easier when you just find a service that works. You're like, okay, well, we're getting decent hires using this service, and that's an easy solution. So we've done that as well. And for a lot of the hires, just thinking, yeah. So I think that answers your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then, so that's a search engine shop. When did WP Speedfix come around?
So at the search engine shop, we were doing website builds, like every agency, we just did everything. Mm-hmm. So we were doing these website builds, particularly around like 2010 to 2012. And I realized after we did the first couple, people are like, we just host it with you guys, don't we? And I'm like, sure, I'll charge you for hosting. So we had a Bluehost account. We had a Bluehost account that was like a couple of bucks a month, and we would charge people, you know, whatever it was a year for hosting on top of that. So I stacked like maybe 20 websites into a Bluehost account. And of course, the thing was falling over all the time. But that at the time, Bluehost was still a fairly decent host. It wasn't like the bargain basement host that it is today. So that's kind of how I got into speed stuff. So it was like, okay, so these websites are kind of falling over. They're unreliable. They need to be reliable. They need to be faster. And around that, that was around the time WP Engine was founded. So we actually moved from Bluehost to WP Engine. And I saw straight away that the rankings, as soon as we moved the sites, the rankings went up. Cloudflare was also new around that time. So we started using Cloudflare sometime around then. That was like 2011, 2012 kind of time period. And it was pretty clear there was a direct correlation between putting people on WP Engine, the speed would go up, and very much the reliability made a huge difference. So we'd move them over to WP Engine at the time, the rankings would immediately go up. Well, okay, there's definitely something here. So we just started doing that for all our agency clients. We had this kind of mantra that like we were made responsible for the website, and if it went down, the customer would call us first instead of the hosting company. So we actually just started hosting the websites ourselves on our WP Engine account and billing the customers for it. So we had kind of had this rule of like if we're doing SEO, we'll host the website. So we started doing speed as part of that, and then had a blog post about fixing slow WordPress, and we just started getting inquiries from people about fixing slow WordPress. So we started doing that as a service. At first, it was a $79 service on a with a gravity form on that blog post. And it just started growing and growing. So 2015, 2016, we split it out as WP Speedfix as its own brand, and just started growing from there bit by bit. And we also, now we actually have a hosting business as a separate brand as well that we've just relaunched a version 2 a couple of weeks ago. So, because a lot of people don't necessarily need speed optimization, they just need a better host, just like in our scenario. So now we have, so WP Speedfix, I think, is growing much faster than the agency. And because it's a productized service, it's a lot easier to grow that part of the business as opposed to SEO, which is actually getting harder, and it's a harder business to be in. So yeah.
Well, I think the cool thing, like I've never done Speedfix as a service, but like I would imagine you're selling to more technical people in that regard who know what they're buying, versus if you're selling SEO, unless you're doing white label, you might be selling to like a non-technical business owner. Do you find that those sales cycles are different, even outside of the fact that of course Speedfix is productized?
Yeah, I don't, it's not necessarily the technicalness of it or the technical nature. It's more that particularly when you have staff, so SEO, it's hard to get a predictable result. Like you can do 100 hours of work in SEO or SEO work and actually go backwards. Whereas if you do 100 hours of technical work, you've got some result that, as long as you're doing the right thing, you've gone forwards. So it's an easier business in that way, that there's kind of a linear relationship between doing the work and getting the result. Whereas there's always that like black box factor with Google, with SEO, like you're like, You could do 10 minutes of SEO and the thing ranks in the number one spot, and you're like, I don't know why, but it's ranking. So why tempt the Google gods? And then there's other sites, as you know, like you could put 1,000 hours into it and they just don't rank. So I don't necessarily think the technical nature is what makes it a better business, but certainly like that factor that like, I know this amount of this result needs this much work, which means then, you know, I need this much team time or these people to do the work, and it costs me this much. So commercially, it's better. It's an easier business to run like that. And doing AdWords stuff, Google Ads management, is like easier in some ways to me as a business than doing SEO as well, just for that reason that, you know, if you run ads, you're getting a result, you're not going backwards. So yeah, that's why I think SEO is getting harder, because it needs, in some ways it's easier, in some ways it needs more of that magic or that really creative SEO in order to compete in some spaces. So if I could choose one or the other business, the WP Speedfix is definitely an easier business to be in a lot of ways. So the other thing is Core Web Vitals has made it, Google have like set the rules for what is a fast website. So in certainly the standard is very high for Core Web Vitals, but in some ways it's made it a lot easier for us, because like, okay, that's the bar where it's fast, and below that is slow or not as fast. So that's also helped in a lot of ways. And also Google is saying speed is important, so we're right there selling speed optimization stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it is definitely a great service. And I know whenever I ran into an issue, I had a particularly busy month on my hands. I was onboarding a handful of customers, and in the contract, we had just said to a few people, it's like, hey, we're going to like fix your speed this month. And then it's like, we're just too busy to do it. Right. And mm-hmm. It's like, we look online, I think it was through a Facebook group, somebody ended up recommending you, and it was a great experience, right? It was just like, one of your project managers connected with us and got the information. We sent them all the credentials and they just did it, right? And handed it back. We didn't have to worry about anything, right? And there's that noticeable, like you said, there's that noticeable difference. Now, today, there's other things at play, right? Obviously, there's some algorithm updates, but the Core Web Vitals, fairly recent, fairly big update, probably, well, big update. How is that impacting site speed and or just SEO in general?
It's an interesting one. So it's definitely, there's definitely a lot more work to pass the Core Web Vitals test. And one of the reasons for that is because the entire site matters. It's not just, you know, if you get the homepage loading fast, generally everything will be fast. Mm-hmm. If you have a site with 1,000 pages, every one of those pages affects, you know, your pass fail and Core Web Vitals. So there's a lot more work for some types of sites to get over that bar. And it certainly put, like, prior to kind of Core Web Vitals coming out or whatever, however you want to released or whatever, people would only look at site speed if the site was noticeably slow, if they were like on their own website and they're like, okay, this is slow, I need help, or they have a WooCommerce site and the back end is slow. But now it's, you know, if they have Google Search Console set up, there's a whole bunch of warnings and errors in there. So for us, it's great because Google's kind of creating a problem for us to solve. So so on one hand, like, Google's done us a favor, and on the other hand, it's actually we've had to increase prices or change the way we've structured offerings because there's just so much more work. It's more of a consulting service now than just a simple productized service. Like I said, when we started, it was a $79 service, and now our consult service is $1,000, and we're actually adding an SEO audit on. We're in the process of adding an SEO audit onto that because everyone comes to us for speed because they really want SEO, and then we look at these websites and like, your SEO is just horrible. Like, you don't have any SEO essentially, which, you know, it for me personally, like, it really hurts me that these people, like, they have a really good web asset and they just need the SEO done properly. So we're now actually going to include, we've kind of come full circle, we're going to include technical SEO audits in some of those higher level services just for that reason, because while speed is important, it's only one part of, you know, maybe 10 or 20 things, big chunky things that need to be done in order to rank a site or to, you know, rank a site as high as possible. So Core Web Vitals is good for us, but I think in some ways people are giving it a bit too much attention in some cases and ignoring other aspects of SEO that arguably are at least as important, if not more important.
Interesting. And it's like I talked to a lot of agency owners, and the majority of them aren't, unless they're like deep in the SEO world, they really don't know about this latest update. And so I imagine a service like yours is really coming in handy for a lot of people who just don't have the time or maybe the ambition to really dig deep and continue to learn about this stuff. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and a lot of it is quite technical. So because I have a background in IT, like, particularly for bigger sites, like, there's a lot of under the bonnet server stuff that network infrastructure stuff that needs to be addressed. It's not necessarily like themes or plugins. So while like a lot of agencies have dev resources, some of this stuff goes into network land or IT land. So it's my background, like, this stuff is like very easy for me to understand because of my background in IT and doing IT support. But, you know, even if an agency does have devs with speed experience, there's still an element, particularly for bigger sites, where it gets more into server specs and things like that. So yeah.
Interesting. Now, so today you're essentially running at least three businesses. You got your hosting, your speed, your website speed, and then your search engine business. Are you the sole proprietor across all those, or do you have business partners? What's that looking like?
Yeah, so our company is Robot Media. So they're all basically brands under Robot Media. We also have a speed test tool, I think we have four brands. Yes. Speed Test Tool, sitespeedbot.com.
Okay.
So they all sit under the Robot Media umbrella. And I don't have a business partner. I don't have like a co-founder or anything like that. In the last business I did, I definitely miss it some days. Like like I miss having someone in the trenches on a bad day. It's good to have a partner to take some of the load, but yeah, so it's, so I'm the sole owner of the business. So yeah.
That's awesome. And then in terms of your business growth, so I imagine, especially after the cash flow issue that you talked about, you're probably looking at like how many sales are in the pipeline, what's marketing doing, how are sales looking, like are retainers coming in, that sort of thing. And then also balancing that with like, do we have the right people on the team? Do we need to hire? Mm-hmm. Like, is that the kind of stuff you pay attention to on a day-to-day basis, or are you more in the weeds and the technical stuff?
Well, probably my biggest learning from going bust was making sure we have up-to-date financials and also legally checking boxes. Like there's certain things the business legally needs to do, like, you know, lodge tax returns on time and do, you know, we have to do quarterly reporting in Australia. So that was probably my biggest learning is, and that was the first job I hired for in the business was bookkeeper. Making sure, you know, zero is up to date, the books are up to date, you know, zero is up to date within the last week, like all the transactions are in there and tagged properly. So from a business maintenance perspective, that's probably the number one lesson I got is like, you can't ignore that stuff. That's like the fundamental layer of the business is the finances and making sure that just the basic maintenance is done there. I do, cause I'm a very technical guy. I like doing some of the tech stuff. So I, you know, for some of the more technical jobs I can be involved. But from like that higher business level perspective right now, I mean, so we have a team of 10, I think, nine or 10, maybe 11. So right now I'm just looking at, you know, because so much has changed with this Core Web Vital stuff and offering higher level services, just I'm in the process of, you know, just looking at everything, the financials and the deliverables and things like that. So doing a lot of work like at that kind of strategy level at the moment, but that ebbs and flows. Like it depends what we're doing. If we roll out, certainly when we roll out these new SEO audits, I'll be involved in the initial phases to refine that and fiddle with the process. I try not to be involved in the weeds too much, but you know, part of me, I like to fiddle and dabble and learn. So I certainly like to get in there. I probably shouldn't, but, should be doing the strategic stuff mostly.
I'm the same. I like doing it, but I usually leave it worse off than when I touched it at the beginning.
Yeah, my brain wants to do it, but in reality, I don't really have that much time to do it. There's other things that I should be spending my time on. So, yeah, I can often leave a mess if I don't have enough time.
Right. Now, in terms of your like lead flow into your companies to ultimately like sign on new clients, are you mostly running on referrals these days? You have like outreach programs going, like what are you doing in terms of sales and marketing?
Yeah, some referral stuff, podcasts like this. Like I enjoy doing the podcast because it's, you know, jump on a call for an hour and have a chat. That's good. That's a good way to kind of meet people and connect with people. SEO and Google Ads. So those are probably the channels we use. We have some partners as well that we do work with that, you know, they bring us in when they need like a web component or some SEO work. So probably equally in all those channels. I'd say Google Ads is fairly new, but it's still so cheap for a lot of these clicks, and leads are still pretty cheap. So it's a bit of a no-brainer. So we're dabbling a bit in Google Display, on YouTube as well, just because, you know, there's a lot of videos about, so in Google Display Network, you can put an ad on a specific video. I'm talking about banner ads, not video ads. So there's still a lot of power there. If there's a particular, and for someone listening to this, if you're targeting a particular niche, go and just do a search in YouTube and find the most popular videos in that niche or that solve that problem. And you can run ads directly on those videos most of the time. So display ads. So even you can run the video ads as well, but that's also something we're playing with right now.
Interesting. Yeah, it was actually today I was looking at YouTube. I've dabbled with it in the past. I don't know if they still allow you to do this, but you used to be able to basically build remarketing audiences off of people who had seen your ad, which was like a great way to stalk people and just yeah. never let them go. And you could even spin that into search audiences too, which was really interesting, but I'm not yeah. sure. Imagine they probably clamped down. It seemed like cheating at the time. So it's like a couple of years has passed since I've touched it, but YouTube, I think, is still just because like it's not as well known as AdWords. So like, even if you're running like your display ads, or your video ads, like there's more, like it's a new interface on top of the fact that the video component is coming into play too, right? Where it's like somebody may have the technical experience to understand what a cost per click is and an impression and all that stuff, which is, if you understand that, like you're going to wrap your head around the video side of AdWords pretty quickly. But then you have to like produce much more complicated ads versus a tiny little, like what, like 1x3 inch square on the top of the search engine. Mm-hmm. And are you guys planning on like diving into the video side of things, or are you planning to stick with display on YouTube for now?
Display for now. We might do the video stuff, but I'm a huge fan of Google Display Ads. Like it's, so in that talk I did, that I think when you mentioned in 2017, I talked about Google Display in there just briefly, and mm-hmm. it's still amazing. In that talk, I mentioned that we had a client who was selling sports equipment like treadmills, and a lot of the competitors were running display ads. Some of the big brands in Australia here were running display ads on their product pages. So we ran display ads for his business on their product pages, and that worked really well. And it's still the same today for the most part. Everyone talks about Facebook ads. There's so much chatter about Facebook ads. I'm like, I actually used to have a blog post that ranked like position 4 if you just type Google Display Network, and this was 10 years ago. Like I still don't understand today why nobody gets that you can, for the most part, find a page that's running display ads and just target that page, so long as it's not too deep in the website. So we would look at YouTube video ads, but until we've tapped display, I think we're not going to go there. But yeah, for anyone listening, I'm like, Google Display is still super underutilized. The clicks are so cheap. You've got so much power, and like from an SEO perspective, and so that was one of the other things I talked about in that talk, is you can go and Google a keyword, or if there's a keyword you want to rank for, go and search it. Probably half the pages in the SERP, depending on what industry it's in, will be running display ads, and then you can just go and run your display ads on their pages that rank. And that can be super powerful. And then you can actually, through the number of impressions that the ads get, you can roughly work out how many visits those pages are getting. You can kind of, it's essentially clickjacking their traffic. I did it the other day. There was an article that ranked for speed optimization. I'm like, okay, that's pretty good. It's got skyscraper ads all over it. So we're running ads on that page now. So, I'm super surprised still, you know, 4 years later or whatever, that SEO guys are still not onto this, that you can actually run ads specific on, you know, a handful of pages that rank and get cheap clicks off those. So yeah, I'm super bullish on display ads.
Yeah, sure. That's a really deep insight there that you just dropped. That's super cool. Not just to get the like to get the impression, like the idea of how many people are searching and whatnot, but then also it's like you're kind of fast tracking your way to guaranteed like high search intent traffic as well. Whereas like the one thing I've never liked about display is you never truly know where the traffic's coming from on the pages that you're showing on. Whereas if you're strategically, just like you say, I've never thought about this, but if you strategically target these places where it's like, sure, they might have a mix, but you know, it's also showing up in Google for a specific term, that's super powerful.
Yeah. So you can use placements and just, you know, go and manually collate a list of placements you want. And then the other thing, if they have a ton of traffic, if those ads are getting a lot of impressions, you can actually create a custom design an ad to match that page that's high contrast and stands out, that's going to get like super high CTR. You can make it look like part of the page or like totally different to the page, like high contrast, depending on what the page is about. And we've done that as well. Like using pretty girls and pictures and things like that to, you know, to jack up the CTR. And it's like the cost versus the return is still crazy. Like it's just so much cheaper than Facebook ads and so much less competition and so much more control depending on what you're looking to do. So I'm a huge fan of Google Ads. Like to me, it's just in search and display, it's just so much easier than Facebook. And it's very logical to me. Like it's not, Facebook is a bit of a black box to me. So yeah.
Facebook's definitely black box me now, but before it was dead simple. If you had a customer list, you just upload that and it would just go find more. Sure. But yeah, starting from scratch was a bit iffy on Facebook. But on that front, there's still little tricks like that too, right? Whereas like you could kind of run like tiers of remarketing videos, like run the first one and then you can run like a second more direct one to all the people who watch like 30 seconds or whatever and create lookalike audiences and stuff like that. But yeah, just the idea of just kind of firing up any of these things and just kind of jacking up these broad search terms and just dumping in your credit card can be a scary idea for a lot of people. And I think that's honestly what keeps a lot of people away from display.
It's definitely a complex interface, and I think like the AdWords interface has got so much more complex over the years, and I think they have a team that just likes moving buttons around. You're like, that button was in this place last week. It takes you like half an hour to find the new place that they've hidden it. So I totally agree. It does take some time, but like again, like SEO is super complicated and takes time as well. It's you just got to work at it, I think.
Definitely, for sure, I agree. Now with your Google Ads, so it sounds like you're doing it for some B2C type stuff. Are you doing it for B2B type stuff also, like clients? And are you also doing it for your own brands as well?
So we're definitely doing Google Ads for WP Speedfix. I actually have another business, another sideline business where we teach people how to play the didgeridoo, which is a musical instrument. So I played a lot. We've had that business for more than 10 years. So a lot of the techniques that we've developed, we've learned through that business, just doing using them there. But we also do ads. So when we started doing SEO in an agency, we kind of realized that, you know, you run out of rope pretty quickly, like particularly for a local business. There's only so much you can do and they rank number one. And then what do you do? So we started doing Google Ads as part of that. So most of our SEO agency clients are also running Google Ads. So we do the Google Ads management for them. And they're a mix, like there's e-commerce, there's, you know, just straight retail. And then there's, you know, professional services. So a total mix there.
Very cool. That's awesome, man. I love how you kind of have all these cross sells set up. You got the hosting, the site speed, SEO, the AdWords, like you really got a lot of bases covered there.
It's been good, particularly like with, you know, when you get ups and downs in the business, like when COVID kicked off last year, one part might go down and the other part goes up. So it kind of balances out a bit.
I definitely noticed that, where e-com just went nuts. Dental went through the floor.
Yeah, everyone, all those medical practices got shut down. We lost all these like medical practice clients. I'm like, well, that's how it goes. I guess what if they can't run the business, there's no point doing any marketing. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting to see. Like, we had a handful of supplement companies, e-com companies, and it was just like overnight, like 2-3 quarters worth of sales in like a month.
Yeah, yeah. Most of the e-commerce stuff went 3-5x that we saw just overnight. We had one customer shut down because they just couldn't handle it. They 10-20x the business and they're like, we just can't do this. So we just turned off the online store. So I thought that was interesting, but you gotta do, I guess.
That honestly happened in one of our cases where it got so bad and the supply chain was so messed up because everybody was buying up the bottles for hand sanitizer. So we couldn't get bottles to put the supplements in after we sold out. And basically it was this like total mess where it's like, okay, we have like giant affiliates driving tons of buyer ready traffic because they're all panicking. They want supplements. And then we're forced to like, and we're running like all these split tests and we're like pouring tons of money into this, like getting the performance up. Right. And then we're forced to put this giant banner at the top. We're sold out, but you can still buy it on pre-order, right? So it's like, it was either that or shut it down. And it was like, okay, we did that. And that ended up, we got kicked out of a lot of payment processors. Like, there was a lot of kind of backlash from that. That was, nobody really saw it coming. Even like the company owners who were like very well versed in the industries.
Yeah. Crazy. Huh? Like, it's, I don't know. It was so weird to see how the whole COVID thing just skewed things overnight. Like, it was like, we just, you know, we were dumped 5 or 10 years in the future and people were just mad to buy online. It was just insane.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was definitely interesting. Awesome, man. And then, so in terms of your kind of future projection, like, are you planning on being in the marketing agency world, like, until you retire? Like, do you have some sort of master plan brewing? Like, what's your game plan?
That's an interesting question. I don't have a good answer to that. Actually, nobody's ever asked me that question straight up. I mean, probably like most agency owners, I have a love-hate relationship some days with the business. So, certainly if someone offered me the right number tomorrow, I'd take it and go live on a yacht somewhere. But yeah, I mean, I enjoy the growth and learning. Like, this is an industry where if you're not learning every day and keeping on top of things, you're dead. Like, you're dead in the water in 3 months' time. So that part of the running this sort of business, really, I enjoy a lot. So, like, I'm driven, like, one of my core drivers is growth and learning. So it's, for me, that's like, that keeps the business interesting. But certainly, like, our hosting brand, I'd focused on growing that a lot, because I think, like I said before, like, the reliability of the hosting and that kind of that core bottom layer, like, speed stuff aside, like, even just hosting reliability is super tied to the performance of all the online marketing stack on top of it. So in terms of like the forward-looking plans, like, growing that part of the business is definitely a focus. And particularly the hosting platform we built does a lot of the things like patching and maintenance, firewall out of the box, whereas a lot of hosting doesn't do that. So, you know, we've referred thousands of people to Cloudways. Cloudways is the host we generally recommend. And now, looking back, I'm like, wow, we could have had thousands of people on our hosting platform. So that's the broad plan moving forward. I think SEO is interesting because it's going to change a lot. It's changed a lot in the last 10 years. So if it changes as much moving forward in the next 5 or 10 years as it just has, then it's going to be interesting. There's a lot of parts of SEO I think will die out, like, particularly in the affiliate space. I think a lot of we already see it, the best of posts are just, that stuff is probably going to go away. Google is essentially a paid search engine now. So I think that element of it's only going to get harder, and it's actually a bit scary, like, seeing where, like, a lot of our local business clients are essentially roadblocked by Google. Google controls how, you know, if they get customers today or not. So definitely plan on being in this industry in some way in the next, you know, for the next 5 or 10 years. So
awesome. And then with your I'm asking because I'm buddies with a guy who runs a software company to do with hosting. Are you using any tools like his company's GridPane, for example? It's like, helps people.
Okay. Yep.
Are you familiar with them?
Yeah, so we did look at GridPlus. So spent probably a year testing different platforms, and GridPane was one of those. Is it Patrick is the guy?
Patrick, yeah.
So, but it was too new at the time when we had to make a decision. So definitely familiar with GridPane, and it is a great product. So we actually, we're built on top of Plesk. Plesk and Cloudflare are probably the two big components of the platform we're using. So we've actually so a lot of the stuff that, you know, GridPane uses Redis a lot for object caching and page caching as well. So we built something akin to that in Plesk, relying a lot on Redis to get kind of those performance gains.
Gotcha. Awesome, man. Yeah, it's always interesting to see how, like, what the solutions a creative entrepreneur comes up with to kind of deliver that that experience to the end user. And it sounds like you have a really good setup there. But yeah, no, I'm excited to see what the future of all marketing in general, but especially SEO, because it's really interesting seeing how Google changes and how they ebb and flow to the point where somebody, like you say, like, they can be getting a stream of calls because they're ranking in the map pack, and then they drop out for whatever reason, and it just dries up overnight. or they start releasing like the service calls where it's like they're putting like special AdWords above everything else.
Yeah, they're basically taking a clip of everybody's business. Like it's kind of crazy, huh?
Yeah. No, it's definitely going to be interesting. And that's honestly why I got out of the agency game and just started up a SaaS company, because of the changes. I was just like, I don't have the nerves to handle this.
Yeah. Yep.
Where it's just like, you're always kind of looking over your shoulder for your client. Right. And the people that are going to continue to do it like you, where it's like, you stay deeply ingrained in those changes. I think you're just going to continue to win. I love that.
Yeah. But yeah, I totally feel you there. Like that's why we're, you know, have a couple of different pillars to the business. Cause it scares the bejesus out of me. Like just seeing like these very traditional, you know, dentists, plumbers, these traditional industries that have been very stable, but they're totally tied to, like, even more so than like an affiliate site. They're so tied to the whims of Google. Google decides to make a change to the SERP layout and overnight these guys can get crushed. So, and they don't understand. They don't know that, you know, when they started their business, they signed up to be plumbers, not deeply involved with Google and essentially in a very deep relationship with Google. So it is in some ways pretty scary how much power this multi-billion dollar monster has, that, and they don't care. Like there's just like, it's too bad. They make a change. That's it. And they pretend that it's for everybody's good, but you can certainly do a lot of damage in the real world. I think, and totally agree with you. Like agency world can be very scary, particularly like if you have a client that's all in on SEO and just won't look at anything else. Like there's nothing else. They're not balancing that out with, you know, Facebook ads or even AdWords or whatever. So yeah, I totally feel you on that.
Well, the fact that, like, I think the fact that your website, like your literal, like online business card, whatever you want to call it, your website, your home online can go down, be inaccessible, and that'll have less of an impact immediately than if you drop out of the local maps ranking.
Yeah.
In terms of phone calls coming in on a daily basis. So it's like, they really do have an extraordinary amount of power, but at the same time, they've also created a magnificent, like Amazon has as well, Facebook has as well, where they've created this platform where entrepreneurs like us, like our whole business is based, our software company is completely based on platforms like them. Like a whole agency is based on stuff like that. So like, it really is interesting seeing these tech giants emerge and then create these whole ecosystems where small businesses can get business through it and people can become consultants and service providers. It really is cool to see it develop.
Yeah. And I guess we can say all these negative things, like it's scary and whatever, but I mean, on the other hand, it used to be, I don't know about in like North America, but it used to be Yellow Pages and that was it. They were the Google 20 years ago. So we can pretend this is all new and it's Google is bad or whatever, but it was, I guess there was always a gatekeeper in a sense too.
That's a good point. Yeah. Cause you don't hear anybody else, this name thrown around when you hear of like directory books that everybody calls, right? It's the Yellow Pages.
Yep.
So. Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, this has been a great episode. So why don't we start winding up? I'll ask you these three quick fire questions. If any of them don't apply, you can just say pass. Okay.
Okay.
Don't worry. They're not that hard. What is your favorite business or marketing related book?
Probably two. They're kind of like related. One is Richard Koch's 80-20 principle. I love that book. It's sitting on my desk right now, propping up one of my monitors, and I probably read it 3 to 5 times and listened to an audiobook at least 10 times. So that probably be my number one book. And then we secondary to that is Perry Marshall has an 80-20 book that's kind of related, like 80, I think it's Perry Marshall's 80-20 sales and marketing guide or something like that.
Yeah.
But that also is kind of like the marketing version of that book. So those would probably be my two favorite business books. Basically any book by Richard Koch is like amazing. His other book, Simplify, is also amazing. But definitely those two 80-20 books, I'd say my top one and two.
Interesting. I'll need to check out Richard Koch of the 80-20 of sales and marketing is one of my probably top five books of all time. It's just, it really breaks things down, but I'll need to check that other one out too.
Yeah. I love the audiobook because he narrates there was an earlier audiobook, but he it was redone and he's the narrator, and it's like just sitting down with like a rich old uncle giving you all this wisdom. Like I really enjoy it. Like it's a very casual style. So nice. it's like weirdly comforting to listen to his voice. Like it's.
Does he stay completely on script or does he kind of wander off?
No, he has a lot of, that's why it's so good. Like he has a lot of like tonality and emotion in the way he reads it or talks through. So that's why it just feels like it's like this rich old uncle sitting you down telling you how it is. So
I love that.
It's a good listen.
That's awesome. Next question. Are you following any CEOs or entrepreneurs right now?
Are you? Who do you follow anybody?
Not super closely, but like if I'm looking for inspiration, I'll typically look up like Elon Musk, Richard Branson, kind of the big thinkers that are just doing things that I can't conceive how they do it.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm following any like CEOs in that respect. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the Dynamite Circle, the DC is like an entrepreneur forum and group. And there's a lot of people in there I kind of follow that are like, you know, they're running different businesses. Like Nathan Barry from ConvertKit is a DCer. So there's a lot of people in there I follow in the SEO space. Ryan Stewart is a great follower as well and often has very good advice. And his course is amazing, the Blueprint Training, I think. So
I've been trying to corner him to come on this podcast.
Yeah, he's a smart guy and has a lot of experience. And I also like that he's no bullshit as well. Like he's like a straight up guy. He's very different to a lot of the stuff in the IM space that's can be, you know, big promises and not much substance, whereas he's a lot of substance. So I enjoy his YouTube channel, is really good.
Yeah. He's somebody who consistently comes up. If somebody knows about him, there's like that good taste in your mouth, right? Versus like a lot of times it's just kind of like a quote unquote guru, right? Whereas he doesn't give off that vibe at all.
Yeah. He's like a serious guy, serious business guy.
Yeah, he's really interesting. And Nathan Barry has some really interesting interviews on YouTube. He's a really great entrepreneur.
Yeah, his blog is also a good read as well. He has some great posts on there too.
Okay, I'll check that out. Cool. And last question, if you listen to business podcasts, what's your favorite business podcast?
Like Tim Ferriss is a good listen, depending on the guest, can be a bit hit and miss. But probably the one I've listened to the most episodes, Tropical MBA. It's probably the other podcast I'd listen to very consistently. So yeah, those two.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for sharing everything that you did with us. And in terms of where people can find you online, where's the best spot or spots to go?
Well, probably if you want site speed stuff, go to sitespeedbot.com and go and speed test your site there. So we built our own speed test app there. It takes like 60 to 90 seconds and it will give you fairly detailed recommendations on, and a lot different to like Paid Speed Insights or GT Metrics. So it'll give you detailed insights on both speed stuff and some technical SEO stuff that even other tools won't. So for someone listening to this, go there. That's probably a good starting point. If you're interested in site speed stuff, go to wpspeedfix.com. But as a starting point, I'd say sitespeedbot.com would be probably the place to go.
Awesome, man. Sounds good. Well, we'll drop those links in the show notes. And thanks for coming on, man. It's been great.
Awesome, man. Been good to talk.